Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. This is the Mail Report for June 2012, so we're going to be talking about the top 300 comic sales through Diamond to retailers for June. This is, of course, what the retailers have been invoiced for, not what they've actually sold to readers, and that's a good thing because it's nice having a couple of copies on the store shelves when we go into the stores. Obviously, you know, retailers are trying to order tight on some titles, so don't be expecting to find copies of everything out there, particularly stuff lower on the list. Now, here in June, we've got a pretty close race between Marvel and DC in the top 300. Marvel came out with a total of 80 items, DC a total of 85. Marvel had just a hair over 41% of the total units sold for the top 300. DC had 39.87. So really, a little bit more than a percent or so difference between the two, and really it equates down to about 80,000 units thereabouts. 80,200 and so, actually 80,199 thereabouts. So pretty close between the two. Image is doing pretty well with 34 items on the list and 5.52% of the total units sold for the top 300. It's not often we get one of these other publishers breaking that 5% mark these days. At one point it was fairly common for Image and Dark Horse and some of the others to be at or around that point. That would have been back, 10, 15 years ago, when Valiant and CrossGem were both strong publishers. They would also be just a little below that 5%. Whereas right now, Dark Horse is doing 1.15% of the total units, 3.15, and IDW doing 3.94%. So, it's interesting because, then we get a lot of other publishers on the list and they're just taking, whatever's left that they can manage to squeeze onto the top 300. But with the premier publishers accounting for, 241 of the 300 items, not a whole lot of room left for the others. And they're accounting for, 93.5% of the total sales for the top 300. This is pretty common. This is also why in a lot of stores you're not going to see them spending too much rack space or time on the publishers in the back half of previews. And percentage-wise, for most stores, it's not bringing in that much revenue. So focus on the low-hanging fruit and the easy wins with Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
It's not fair, but it makes sense. But I think for the bigger cities and stuff, there's an opportunity for a store to really make a name by strongly supporting the other publishers and being kind of known as the store to go to in town for that kind of stuff. But you got to have a critical mass of comic book readers in that kind of area to really make that work. Moving over to the top comics. Unsurprisingly, the top two slots are the bi-weekly Avengers vs. X-Men event with issues 6 and 5 taking slots 1 and 2. Number 6 doing about 190,701 estimated units. Number 5 doing 186,545 estimated units. That's about 2.25% growth per issue on those, so that's pretty good. It's interesting that that's doing, close to the 200,000 mark, yet AVX Versus is down at rank 10, doing 94,530 issues, down about 4.33%, and it's doing, half what the core title is doing. So I think, as an experiment to see if zooming in on the brawls and the fights, make sense and stuff. I mean, it's top 10 title, so it's not doing too bad. But it's not as anywhere near as selling as well as the main title itself. So interesting experiment. Don't know if I were them, if I would continue with that or not. It would really depend on the next event. And based on sales of Avengers vs. X-Men, I think it's pretty certain they're going to do another event. I mean, it's working. Why not? The only other thing Marvel had in the top 10 was at rank number 9. That was Spider-Man number 1, 94,543 units. So failed to break 100,000 with that title. Personally, I thought it was good. I've been enjoying the other two issues that came in since. It's interesting, though, because number 2 of that series is down at rank 20, 68,282. So a 27.78% drop between those. Now, were you one of the ones that contributed to that drop, Bob?
I was indeed. I tried out the first issue, and we talked about it.
Yeah.
it's like not a whole lot happened. And, you know, am I interested in the whole story? Maybe at some point. At $3.99 an installment, I absolutely did not feel like I got $3.99 worth of. I mean, we talked about this on the last weekly spotlight. I just didn't feel like I got $3.99 worth of story out of that. And that was me personally. Somebody else could read that and say, wow, I really got my money's worth. It wasn't that way for me, though.
But it's also something that when it gets compiled into a trade paperback, you know, and you can get it all in one sitting, it'll be interesting to see how that does, because I could see where it could do well in that format.
Well, I mean, that's also the thing. It's a 6-issue series?
Five.
Five? Okay, so five times. So if it's $20, I would not pay $20 for that story. You know, if I saw it for half price somewhere, sometime, and it was $10, I might. But there's no way I would pay $20 for that story as a trade paperback.
But I think there are people that might pay $20 for it in a trade paperback that
sure
wouldn't in five individual issues.
Correct.
So it's something that, because it's known to be self-contained, could do well in that format. It may not, but, you know, it's interesting to see that sharp of a drop that quickly. Let's see. We've got Batman and Justice League continuing to be top sellers for DC. Batman number 10 doing 130,260. That's up about down 3.22%. And Justice League number 10, 127,082 estimated units. That's also down about 3.23%. But the fact that both of these titles, now granted, everything in the top, the top 16, all but two of the items in the top 20 had multiple covers. Mm-hmm. So the fact that Batman and Justice League have a bazillion covers or whatever is certainly helping keep them here. But for titles to be sustaining over the 125,000 mark, that's very impressive. Back when Marvel had titles sustaining above the 100,000, they were much closer to the 100,000 mark. And that was quite a few years ago. All four of the Before Watchmen titles that came out in June did fairly well. Minutemen, 107,517. Comedian, 104,143. Silk Spectre, 102,958. And Night Owl, 101,290 estimated units. So a spread of about 6,000 between them, so pretty tight clustering on that. I don't know that I would have necessarily guessed they would have come in this order, but it kind of makes sense. And again, not that much of a difference between them.
I mean, they're very close.
Yeah. And it's one
I'm
of
not
those
surprised. I'm not surprised that Minutemen came out on top, because it's a team book.
I'm going to be curious to see how these change, both in terms of relative ranking and just, you know, unit sales with the second issue. Because I think in some of these cases, people may have said, you know, I was excited about Minutemen. Maybe that format worked for them. Maybe it didn't. You know, how did they react to these? And how quickly might we see that kind of witness again, Spider-Man. Pretty sharp drop just within a two-week time span between those issues. You know, with a month, people have had a chance to go to their store, pick up the issue, go home, read it, go back the next week saying, yeah, I don't know, not for me, and possibly still be within the final order cutoff date for the next issue. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can maintain above 100,000. I mean, I doubt they will. Just some standard attrition of a couple of percent would knock them below that in some cases, and typically between a first and a second issue, we tend to see closer to a 20% drop. but, you know, this is a somewhat of a unique kind of a situation here. So who knows how it'll do. Clearly, you know, using the Watchmen characters, tagging it before Watchmen and the whole promotional push they did benefited not only these titles, because there's no way they would have sold this way if they were, you know, rebranded characters. But also Watchmen itself, the trade paperback, moved 11,372 units in reorder activity this month over on the trade side. So, I mean, that's just benefiting them all the way around. And this is stuff they can be collecting into trades and possibly seeing the same kind of evergreen stuff they see on Watchmen. I think it was a smart move to put high-quality, high-caliber talent on these books versus just churning stuff out. Rank number 12, we've got Astonishing X-Men number 51. This was the marriage issue for North Star. This was up 33.61%, putting it at 82,650 estimated units, also making it the top-selling ongoing X-Men title. And really the only ongoing, the top-selling ongoing Marvel book, really, because everything else above it is either Avengers vs. X-Men, the limited series, the Spider-Man limited series, or AVX vs. limited series. Uncanny X-Men itself, though, did crack the 70,000 mark, with number 13 doing 70,523 units. But this bump we're seeing on Astonishing X-Men almost certainly going to completely evaporate with issue 52, since it was essentially stunt programming, if you will, with the gay marriage there. And of course, they're hyping it as much as they can. And on the one hand, I can't fault them for that. On the other hand, I certainly can. They're making it about the issue of, you know, gay marriage and stuff versus about necessarily an organic part of what was going on in the title. It's also very interesting that the top-selling monthly X-Men or Avenger book had nothing to do with the event, Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think while the event itself is working, it's not having the sales bump on the related titles that we've seen on other events. Now, certainly I wouldn't expect it to have had the Civil War level, you know, sales bump, because that was kind of unprecedented. And, you know, while they had strong sales bump on other events such as Secret Invasion, what happened with Civil War was just, I don't say a bit of a fluke, but it was also one of the first major events in a while. And I think that played a lot into it. People have gotten, I think, a bit more, I don't want to say burnt out, because I don't think that's accurate, but I think selective on what event crossovers they get and stuff these days, just because there's so many and so often.
Well, I think that a lot of people, I mean, and I opted out of this event, but I think a lot of people are opting out of tie-ins, you know, where it's like, you know, I'll read Avengers versus X-Men, but I'm not going to read the, you know, all the different books that tie into it if I wasn't reading them anyway.
Well, I think you saying you opted out of that event is a little inaccurate. You're almost opting out of the Marvel Universe at this point.
I
don't fault you for that.
I would say that this event and events like it are part of the reason that I've been opting out of the Marvel Universe.
Oh, totally.
So it's not blameless. Let's put it that way.
Well, no, the two are strongly related, because they've been doing a string of events time after time. And, I mean, we've talked about it on a number of cases where we're reviewing a book, and it's like, well, this got shanghaied for 3 months to go be part of, you know, event du jour, you know, whatever it was at the time. And in some cases, Heroes for Hire, the War Machine title that Rhodes
Hercules.
Had or whatever, Hercules, it completely derails the story momentum. Now, there are other cases where it actually builds in and go, you know, helps the title, but that's very few and far between. And frankly, I'd be a little hard pressed to name any off the top of my head. But this goes down to, it's an easy way to sell comics. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bad way to sell comics, because it's not sustainable. It doesn't last. I mean, look at, rank number 11. We got Detective Comics there down 13%, 13.22, to 83,314. And the reason it's down is because it was up on the previous issue because of the whole Night of Owls storyline, you know. And it went from, on number 8, 87,675 units. Let's see. 9 bumped up to 96,010 units. And then 10, 83,314, like I said. So pretty much the trend line, you know, if you take out the, you know, issue 9, which is the crossover or whatever, the tie-in, the trend line is pretty consistent. It's, you know, here today, gone tomorrow kind of a thing on these events. Does it make sense to do something like the Night of Owls? Well, yeah. Do you get lasting sales benefit from that? Usually not. And this is a clear case where they did not. And I'm willing to bet if we look at the different titles and stuff, we're going to see the same sort of a thing. I mean, we see it on Batman Dark Knight, where it went from 74,287 before to 82,163 during, and then 71,669 after. So, sure, you got the bump of, what, 8,000 or so, but you had a net loss of, you know, not only that 8,000, but another 3 afterwards. So, a case could be made, it's as effective as pushing people off a title as getting them on.
Yeah.
You know, we see the same, actually on Batman and Robin, we see something a little different. It had gotten down to 59,993 units with 8. On number 9, 75,962. It actually retained sales over number 8 with number 10 to get to 66,889. That actually put it as, aside from the number 9 there, the best sales it had had since issue number 4. So that basically kind of reset the clock, if you will, back about 5 issues worth of sales attrition. Now, whether they hang on to that or whether that's because of the meeting of the various Robins and the start of that storyline having garnered some attention, a little hard to tell at this point. With the next issue, we'll have a little better insight into that. But, you know, this is why I always harp on, you know, you should be selling the title, not the individual issue. You know, it's very easy to pump up the sales on an issue with multiple covers, a crossover storyline gimmick or whatever. It's much harder to just retain sales issue after issue. And if you just do that, in many cases, you will have accumulated, you know, the equivalent sales to an additional issue over the course of a year easily. On the Wave 2 titles at DC, we've got a couple of second issues there. We've got Earth 2 having dropped 20.69%, so about 17,828 units, bringing that down to 68,334. We have World's Finest at rank 40 having dropped 25.91%, so 16,214 units lost, taking it down to 46,360. Let's see where those other two titles are. Actually, the other four. Ravagers, number 2, dropped 29.61%. So it lost 11,785 units, taking it down to 28,019. Two ranks below that at rank 90 is Dial H, number 2, having lost 32.43%. So 13,224 units lost, bringing it down to 27,550. Kind of makes sense, because I think a lot of that was kind of the looky-loos, wondering what that was going to be about and if they were going to like it. So for a risky title like that, I think that kind of a drop, not too surprising. GI Combat, number 2, dropped, wow, 43.67%.
Yikes.
This goes back to what we were talking about, I think on the Weekly Comic Spotlight this week, about how that split book format, maybe not the best thing. It dropped 13,261 units, taking it from 30,364 down to 17,103.
That is harsh. that's a huge drop.
Yeah.
It's not a bad book, but it's not, I mean, I read it and I liked it, but it wasn't something that I looked at and said, wow, that's great, you know. And when I look at it as like a $3.99 book, it's just, wow, you know, $3.99. I wish this was $2.99.
Yeah. Well, I think there are a couple of lessons to be learned here with some of the other number twos we've got on the list. We've got the second issue of Exo Man of War at rank 108. It dropped by over half, 50.22%. So it went from 42,705, dropped by 21,447 to 21,258. Now, this had no multiple covers. The first issue had a number of cover gimmicks, including the high-tech, you know, phone layover, whatever the hell that thing was. So, I mean, certainly I think a lot of the drop is reflective of the sales gimmicks they used to prop up the first issue. But, you know, the slow burn in there, I gotta wonder if that was part of it too. Another one that had a colossal drop, again, because of a first issue stunt, was Higher Earth number 2, down at rank 214. Now, the stunt there on the first issue was a $1 cover price on that first issue. Now, that made a lot of sense. It got us to try it. I know I think I got the second issue, but didn't continue after that.
I'm sticking around. I liked it. It's a decent enough sci-fi series, but, you know, I think that the more I talk to people, and I talk to a bunch of people when we were at Comic-Con about comics in general, and a lot of people don't buy that many. I mean, they're comic fans, but they don't buy that many comics, and I can appreciate that. And, you know, there's a lot of people that they buy 10, maybe 20 at the outside titles a month. And the books they are going to buy are the ones that for them are a 5 out of 5. And it's like, I like Higher Earth. I think it's a good book. I like that new Extermination series that Boom has out. But I mean, if I was only getting 20 books a month, would I be getting those two books? And the answer is no, I wouldn't.
Would you have even sampled those books?
Oh, for a buck, certainly. You know, it's like, that's the thing. If I'm buying 20 books a month and there's something that's a dollar, I'll give it a shot because, you know, maybe I'll look at it and say, wow, that was the greatest comic I've ever read. That's an absolute 5 out of 5 for me. And then maybe that will displace something else on my list.
I question,
you know,
if people,
for $3.99, I don't know if everybody's going to do that. You know,
I think most of the people at that level would not. I think part of the reason they're at the 10 or 20 a month or whatever is because they tend to be highly selective for good or bad. And unless something comes out with strong promotion, good buzz, they're not even going to sample it in most cases, I think. Now, certainly there are going to be some who will, but I would think, hey, you know, I'll try that Higher Earth at a buck. Maybe I'll like it. Gee, I'll go try this other thing at a promotional price for the first issue. Sooner or later, they're going to hit enough things that click with them. They start creeping up past that 20 a month, you know, and I don't know that really happens that often. You know, in this case, with that dollar cover price, I expected a strong drop when the second issue comes in at just shy of $4. I mean, somebody might have liked it for a buck, but not four.
That's the thing. It's like if it went from a buck to $3, you know, what would the sales have been like? And I know Boom, you know, they need to price at $3.99 to make their publishing model work, but you know, $3.99 is a lot. And a book has to be pretty darn good for me to want to drop $3.99 on it. I mean, like I said, I mean, to me, if I'm not at a 4 out of 5 on something, it's not going, but gee, I'm pretty easy because I still read 115 comics that for the most part sustain themselves at that 4 out of 5 level for me.
But you're easy in some areas versus others. You're much easier
right
at this point on the independent and Image books than Marvel and DC even.
Right. I'm easy on something that
tastes.
Feels different, right?
Yeah.
And I think that was the thing that Higher Earth had going for it, because it wasn't like a lot of other things that I've been reading. It had a uniqueness to it, you know, that I enjoyed, whereas, you know, to a certain extent, a lot of the superhero books, there's a certain, yeah, it's, you know, yet another Captain America comic book, you know, kind of feel to it. And I can drop that a little easier right now.
Yeah.
That's just where I'm at.
But other second issue drops. We had a 40% loss on Epic Kill, about a third on Trio and Dancer. It's one of those things that doing a slow burn right now, very questionable. People are going to sample the first issue, neither you hook them or you don't. You know, even the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover lost 22.37%, so a little higher than standard, but not by much. But, you know, when I start to see some of these that are you know, dropping the 40, 50, 60%, in a lot of cases, that's because of a gimmick they did to promote that first issue. So they sold the first, but they didn't sell the series.
But that's the trick, right? They have to, that's what they have to explicitly be looking at is, you know, am I telling a good enough story that's unique enough and different enough that I can hook people for the long term? And, you know, if they can't, they can't, you know.
I just question how many times the marketing engine behind some of these, and this is more for the big guys, because I think the smaller publishers don't really have quite that marketing engine just because they're smaller. You know, how many times they're marketing the stunt, the issue, the gimmick, and not the title itself? Because I really think there are a lot of very strong titles out there that if you can get somebody to try, they're likely to stick with. Versus, you know, the standard attrition on most titles. And I really don't think, you know, the number of multiple covers is just, you know, a little outrageous. How many were there this month? There were
people buy them though. I mean, I think that somebody's got to be, there's a lot of people who are double dipping. And I do it myself on Spider-Man. You know, they put out a variant cover on Spider-Man and I buy the double covers on Spider-Man all the time.
98 items on the list had multiple covers. Okay, and that just means they had at least more than one order code. And in some of these cases, they had, you know, three or four or more variant covers.
Well, some of these companies, their whole business model is predicated on variant covers, it seems.
Oh, totally. But I really question the wisdom of that as digital starts to become, you know, a growing factor as to how big right now, really, you know, it's to a certain degree anyone's guess, but it's certainly a, even at, if it's only about 10%, and that may be optimistic, that may be pessimistic, I don't know. But even at that level, it's a notable factor in sales. It's certainly a great on-ramp for new comic readers. And it's one of those where multiple covers just doesn't work. You're not going to get somebody to buy, nor would you want somebody to buy two copies of something thinking it's different because it's got a different cover, getting the same thing. That's just going to turn them off big time on that publisher. So if you're reliant on variant covers to boost sales, that works in print. That does not translate to digital.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, I think you got to look at the publishers that are doing it. Like for Marvel and DC, sure. I mean, as they move to, you know, wanting to bring in the digital audience, I mean, the variant covers that Marvel and DC sell, and I can only speak from, you know, what causes me to get a variant cover, is, you know, they're selling in the first case to a completist, you know, and to a specialized market. So like, for instance, I collect Spider-Man. I get all the Amazing Spider-Man comics. So if I can, I will get the variant covers of Spider-Man. Now, that said, I will draw a line at a certain point. You know, when they have a 1 in 50 or a 1 in 100 variant, well, I'm not going to pay $100 for a Spider-Man comic that came out last week. That's crazy to me, but it's not crazy to someone else because someone's buying these things. I don't see them all over the place on the racks at the comic shops I go to. So if you've got a 1 in 50 or a 1 in 100 variant, and those are typically marked at the, you know, $50 to $75 range on those higher ratio ones. That tells me that there's 1 out of 50 fans of that thing is willing to drop that kind of money on it. I mean, or else I'd be seeing a lot of them sitting around, which I tend to not. But, you know, some of the ones where it's like more of the 1 in 10, I think that on those, some of the retailers, at least the one I go to, he does pretty good on selling those because he pretty much sells them for cover price. Sometimes if it's a real popular one like the X-Men books, it'll maybe be a dollar more than cover price or something
right
on the 1 in 10s. And it's pretty easy to get an X-Men fan or an Avengers fan or whoever to, you know, get the cool extra cover, you know, just to keep their collection complete. And again, it's playing on the collectors, right?
And that's
they'll do that.
a kind of consumer
right.
that simply does not exist digitally. And if the marketing effort is being spent chasing those guys, they're going after the wrong kind of sales for long-term success. Because while that exists right now in print, and probably will to varying degrees over time, we've seen times where that part of the print market collapsed. And the people who kept buying were the ones actually interested in the stories, not the collectability, the perceived value of those covers, etc. And just doing a quick look at these 98 that had multiple covers, it's kind of evenly split between Marvel, DC, and everybody else. So it's not like it's just Marvel going after this or just the indies or whatever. Everybody seems to be chasing this. And, I mean, it's easy money, it's low-hanging fruit, I get it. It just seems like the time and the effort would be much better spent, although not as profitable in the short term, chasing after how can you retain readers. Because, I mean, Walking Dead is the success it is, not because of cover gimmicks, whatever, but because Kirkman has kept readers and grown his readership. You know, it's something he has worked long and hard at. And, you know, that's why it is the top-selling independent book out there, or non-Marvel DC book, I should say. You know, issue 99 did 55,712 units. He worked up from, I think, the low point of, like, or the starting point of around 6,000, I think. 7,266 it started with, second issue dropped to 6,067. So he has slowly climbed his way up, not so slowly lately. He's gotten some big jumps, specifically between 96 and 97. It went up about 15,000, 20,000. But he's doing that based primarily, not exclusively, on the perceived quality of the work. The TV show helps, you know, keeping everything in print in varying format helps. I've got to imagine the action figures, the board games, the, you know, all that stuff doesn't hurt either. But, you know, that kind of a long-term success story is so unique, so rare. And I don't see, you know, any concerted effort at Marvel, DC, or some of the other publishers to really focus on, is this single issue, you know, seen as worth the money? Is this trade coherent in and of itself? This is more what they focus on. But, you know, if the issues don't keep selling, they don't keep making the content, you don't get the trade. I mean, again, I get why they chase after the variant covers. I get why they go for the collectability. But while that is profitable, that's profitable in not the best of ways. You know, I'd much rather see them writing stories that sell themselves versus, gee, let's go have our two big franchises go fight each other and do a slugfest and see if that gets some interest. Or let's go reboot our universe and see if that works. You know, with the upcoming Marvel Now, they're going to relaunch a bunch of titles. This is going to put Captain America up at, I think, volume 7 or something. And it's at the point, and I was talking with one creator at Comic-Con on this, and he thought, oh, well, that's a collector's problem. Yeah, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it's one of those things that, you know, if I say, hey, you really should go check out Captain America number 4, what comic am I talking about? There's at least half a dozen to pick from. You know, it makes fans selling other potential fans on titles harder to do. You know, when I've had coworkers come up and say, you know, I want to read some Wolverine, what should I read? You know, I got to be pretty clear that I'm talking either Wolverine Origin or Origins plural, or which volume of Wolverine or whatever. It's more complicated to tell them what I think they should start with than it really would be if it was just, well, pick Wolverine's issues X to Y.
So here's an interesting though. So he says that's a collector's problem, right? Well, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that I don't care because it's only
I forget if you said
that...
collector or readers, but it was not a publisher or creator kind of a concern.
Yeah, I mean, because the reason that you do a new number one is to juice up the orders, right? And it's like that's not a reader thing, right? It's like someone who wants to just read a comic that you're trying to tell them a good story. You know, people say, well, it doesn't matter. I'm a reader. I don't care if it's number one or number 50. Well, then if you don't care, why do you get all excited when somebody wants it to stay number 50 or number 51? You know,
or why do sales go up when it hits 50 or hits 100?
Yeah. Or a new number one. I mean, sales go up. I mean, someone's buying extras when things are at these milestone points.
It's a little different with the new number ones than like the 50, the 25s, the 75s, and the 100s. Because the new number ones are perceived, rightly or wrongly, as being jumping on points. And I find that pretty interesting because I'm on kind of both sides of the fence there. I mean, one of the comments John Suntress made on the podcasting panel at Comic-Con was with the before Watchmen, people who are going to review it really should have recently read Watchmen. And I see where he's coming from, but frankly, I kind of sort of disagree with him on that because, well, these are all new number ones. They're saying it's going to be accessible. They're leveraging on Watchmen, whatever. Familiarity of Watchmen, certainly an added bonus. But if I've got to go read a 12-issue series, however great it may or may not be, and I think people would usually say it's pretty damn great, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that, but do I have to go read that? Do I have to go do that kind of homework to go read Minutemen, Comedian, Silk Spectre, Night Owl number one? You know, it's...
You shouldn't have to.
I shouldn't have to. And the irony with those all selling over 100,000 is it's not like the Watchmen were original characters to begin with. You know, and part of what made Watchmen great was in and of itself was really solid storytelling. Now, I think with these before Watchmen, there are a couple of them that had they, you know, repainted the sets, if you will, and change the names, would still be just as great as they are. Maybe not all of them, but I think most of them. And again, that goes to putting high-quality creators on these things. But in this market, if it had simply been, you know, teamed, you know, renamed versions of these, we would not see them in the top 10. Probably wouldn't even see them in the top 100. You know, just because people care about... It's a recognizable name. It's something that feels familiar. You know, whether in this case it is, or in other cases, it's just a reuse of a name. So as much as readers and creators and publishers try to play the, well, it doesn't really matter game, it does. That's why they do this crap. You know, that's why it's before Watchmen. It's like, hey, here's a really successful thing. We think we can, you know, pay tribute to it and do more stories with these characters. With top creators, why not try? Okay, fair enough. You know? In other cases, it's a let's reboot the entire universe, see if this clicks with readers. You know? Okay, let's rename or retitle the titles in Marvel yet again. Maybe that will get people on. All of these make a certain degree of sense up until you realize on the second issues, they usually drop. And on the third, they usually drop. And on the fourth, they usually drop. Less so with each. But unless it's a cover gimmick, a bold new direction, or the usual, it doesn't maintain sales. So, to me, it goes back to something is, I don't want to say fundamentally broken, but I'm reading a lot of things where I think there are, in some cases, very subtle story crutches being used that don't serve long-term sales. Mm-hmm. You know, something where if I'm reading, and I did this just last night, 13 issues of a series, and really liking it, really involved, and doing it back to back, I should not need to be reading the previously on blurb to be getting story elements that were not actually in the previous issues. To me, that's a writing crutch of, well, I need this to happen, so I'm just going to slide it in here and declare it happened, but not do it in the story. And in some cases, I'm seeing this from phenomenally good writers. But it's something that has been allowed to happen, has been encouraged to happen by kind of the writing for the trade mentality, I think questionable editorial strength across the board in some areas. You know, to me, one of the jobs of the editor ought to be making sure that each installment of the story, you know, is satisfying in and of itself and, you know, justifies its cost and encourages people to pick up that next one. And, you know, we're seeing so few things, you know, above that 50,000 mark or above that 60,000 mark or above that 70,000 mark. Yet, you know, we can sell 190,701 copies of Avengers vs. X-Men. You know, the collectors are certainly out there and in many cases in full force. I'm under no delusions that Avengers vs. X-Men actually has that many readers.
But I think there are a decent number of readers on that too, because, and that's all that they're reading. You know, when I was out at shops on Free Comic Book Day, there were a lot of people there at a couple of the shops that I was in that were, you know, they had copies of Avengers versus X-Men in their hand that I'm standing in line or just, you know, and, you know, talking to them. It's pretty clear that the only thing that they're getting is Avengers versus X-Men. They don't read any other comics. They're just like, this sounded cool, you know, and they're reading Avengers versus X-Men. Now, the real question becomes, is that going to serve as a stepping stone to get them to try out some other comics somewhere along the line? Or, you know, and I don't know how many people, you know, so out of the people I see, you know, five or six that all they're reading is Avengers versus X-Men. Well, that's an isolated incident. But if you kind of take that across the U.S., I mean, there's likely to be hundreds, if not in the low thousands of people, at least, who are in this same boat. Now, can you take some of those people and turn them into ongoing readers of something that comes out of Avengers versus X-Men? That's the
I point. Would certainly hope so.
Yeah.
But do you really see any indication that that's happening?
Well, I think we'll find out when we see the reboots that come, or relaunches, or whatever they're going to call them, that come at the end of Avengers versus X-Men.
I would think if those events were bringing in lapsed readers or otherwise apathetic readers, after the series of events we've had at both Marvel and DC over the last decade, if there was any chance of getting them solidly on board other titles, we would not have sales where they're at. We would have higher sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if each one only brings in a few thousand or even a few hundred, that hopefully would add up or at least account for some of the attrition we're seeing. I mean, it's always been, to me, the biggest problem in the industry is sales attrition. You know, not can we get somebody to sample a title? Because there's all kinds of gimmicks you can do for that. But, you know, how long is this title going to last? Every time they relaunch a title, it builds up that you know, subconscious, this too shall pass, you know, mentality of, well, you know, if I don't like this writer, I'll just wait for the next. Maybe they think to sample it then, maybe they don't. And if they don't like that one, they'll just wait till the next. It becomes a waiting game. And it was bad enough when people were waiting for the trades. Now they're waiting for the next story arc because there's the perception that, well, not just any issues is accessible. And in many cases, that's
true.
They're
right. In many cases, right.
But that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, it comes down to when both of us, I think, started getting into comics, and it was, you know, a couple of years off, the two of us, you know, Spider-Man would go fight in the course of six issues at least six different villains. You know, it's easy to then go pitch each of those issues. Whereas now, in the course of a six-issue thing, he's still fighting the same guy for most of those six issues. Or maybe you've split it over two arcs and he's got two villains. You know, it's harder to solicit and pitch those individual issues because they're chapters of a story, not stories in and of themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are with the 10th issue of all the new 52 books. And in most cases, certainly not all, we're on the second story arc. There's a few where maybe we're a little further than that. But that, I think, is one of the many factors contributing to, you know, in some cases, lackluster sales. In other cases, we're seeing great sales despite of it. Again, you know, Batman doing 130,000. You know, that's the strength of the character, the interest in the character, etc. And we're still seeing reorder activity on the first issue of Batman. You know, and that's something I want to talk about for a bit. I went to the So You Want to Be a Comic Retailer panel at Comic-Con and was talking to Amanda Emmerich of Comics Pro afterwards. She, first off, best cheerleader for comics out there. She is so energetic, so passionate about comics. I think Comics Pro is very lucky to have her as, I think, their executive director and stuff. Just her enthusiasm for comics and stuff is great. And one of the things we discussed was just how well DC has supported the new 52, because she, opened up a new store and, you know, for a variety of reasons, including, you know, just flat out necessity, was very conservative on her orders, not knowing how that particular, location would respond to certain titles, whatever. but she was always able to reorder more copies of the things she needed. And you compare again, we're seeing reorder activity on the first issue of Batman, among other issues, here, as well as number 4 and some others. Compare that to where Marvel was at one point many years ago, where it's a order now or well, you're just not going to get it. Scare tactics almost.
Right.
You know, Marvel's doing pretty good with reorder activity on things like Astonishing X-Men, obviously Avengers versus X-Men, stuff like that. I think that kind of support of the retailers from the publishers, really, I think, a smart move in this day and age. Because, you know, if I were a retailer, I would be very conservative on my orders. I would be tracking how things are selling, trying to keep tabs on how the readers and the customers at the store are liking various things, what they're liking, what they're not, and why, and adjusting orders accordingly. I think the fact that we're seeing, you know, 20, 30%, in some cases as high as 60% drops between a first and a second issue are reflective of many retailers doing that. So the fact that you know, DC has chosen to respond to that by keeping things available, keeping things in the pipeline, they should be applauded for that. You know, I think Marvel's taken a similar tact in some respects by keeping some reorder stuff available on certain titles, but I think they're also going in the other direction of let's just get stuff out faster, you know, and filling up that pipeline with multiple issues of so many titles. I think that's potentially very short-sighted. You know, get some sales now, but this is a habitual buying pattern that, you know, it's like, how do you put out an oil derrick fire? Well, you blow it up. In other words, get more fire, put out the fire. How do you kill a habitual reading pattern? You make the habit too frequent, too expensive.
That's been the dark side of, you know, you can leverage collectors as a publisher or as a marketing person at a publisher, right? Mm-hmm. So you can take those collectors and you can push them around to a pretty decent extent, right? You got people that are collecting and collecting and collecting, but I found with myself that there is a tipping point. And when you bring it to the point that you make it impossible to have a complete collection, it's a lot of times that's the straw that broke the camel's back, and I'll just walk away from something entirely. It's like, well, you just made it so that I can't have a complete collection. So, okay, I'm going to stop collecting this thing altogether.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a tipping point there where, you know, you don't want to do that with too many people. And that's not going to apply to every collector, but, you know, boy, there are so many things that I have stopped collecting over the years because they made it too difficult, too expensive, too whatever, to make it practical to collect it. Now, what you can then count on is you got your specialized collectors that all they collect is that one thing. And for them, you can milk them a little farther because, you know, they don't have all these diverse things kind of pulling at their interest and pocketbook. So, you know, they'll last a little longer.
Well, in some cases, yes, in some cases, no. Because they're so specialized, you know, can you get them into the store frequently enough to maintain them as a habitual reader or collector or whatever, yet not so frequently they feel they're having to go to the store every other week just for one thing?
True.
You know, it's a balancing act, you know, and it comes down to, do you want the guy who's the specialized one and maybe you can milk a little bit more frequently and a little deeper or whatever every time, or do you want somebody you can actually then transition into other titles? And, you know, you need some of both, obviously. There's no, you know, perfect consumer to go after. But I think the best step, you know, forward in going after any consumer is to reduce confusion. You know, this whole Captain America and title that keeps renaming. Just call it Captain America and ... and put the different thing on the cover, if you will, but make it clear it's Captain America and Friend.
Well, they keep the number. That one's kind of funny because instead of what would normally be the case that they would, you know, renumber that every 3 issues and just be, you know, number 1 again, Captain America and Iron Man number 1, Captain America and Hawkeye number 1. This one, they keep up the numbering on it, But then they change the actual physical title every three or four issues. It's just kind of strange.
I'd need to actually open one of those up to see what it says inside the front cover and what the official title is. But the way it shows up on the Diamond data, you know, it's as if they're completely separate titles that just have, you know, numbering that flows through.
Right, yeah. The comic book databases that I see also have it as completely separate titles. So, I mean, I'm not getting it, so I don't know what it says inside. But.
And, you know, I see the creator's point of really does it matter? And to a certain degree, it doesn't. But to a certain very practical point, it does, you know? Because if I'm on a system that's literally looking for Captain America and Hawkeye, well, it ended with, you know, 632. End of story. Maybe I'm not going to realize Captain America and Iron Man followed the next month. You know, it's something that I think they could simplify some stuff. And is it going to radically change sales? No. But over time, I think it would be helpful. You know, when I started reading comics, I knew what was on my pull list and could pretty much project that out for the next 5 years based on the frequency. If I were to try to do that today, I'll forget it. Forget it. Very little of what I'm reading now existed 5 years ago as this volume and this title.
Well, that's true. You know, it's just I've been keeping track for a while of, you know, since over a year ago when I tried to cut back. You know, I have this thread that I try to use to keep up on what I'm buying, and it's, you know, okay, here's issues that are ending and here's new number ones. And there's like almost every week because things are ending, not typically because I'm dropping them anymore. It's just they're ending because it's just a mini series or a limited series or whatever. And then there's other mini series that are rolling on. But we've talked about this many, many times before. It's all those decision points.
Well, because I've toyed around with the idea. I've got the history of everything I bought through DCBS. That goes back to 2003. So I could do, you know, yeah, 2003. I could do, you know, pretty clear what I've added and dropped for quite a length of time just through that. Prior to that, I was shopping here locally at a store. And one of the things I just know that they dreaded was periodically I would come in with a update my pull list to this. Here's what to add. Here's what to drop. And, you know, 10 years ago, it wasn't as bad as it is now, but it was still pretty bad, you know, and just the time it would take for them to, all right, yep, this is in the pull list. Let's take that out because it's a dead title. Let's add this, whatever. It's a daunting task when somebody comes in, particularly at my level of reading, with a list that's not short. Now, how does that impact sales? Well, I don't do that often. So there's a window of time there where they're not ordering certain things because they don't know if I want it or not, you know? And the opportunity for missed sales, I think, is noticeable. And again, the decision point both on the reader and the retailer level and the disconnect of information there, I think certainly hurts sales. You know, with the new Marvel Now, you know, announced, how many people are necessarily going to transition from whatever X-Men and Avenger titles they're on to whatever they're offering then? You know, how many are going to say, gosh, you know, I've been liking Captain America, but with this new creative team, I'm going to use that as a jumping off point, versus how many are going to say, wow, that's exciting, I'm going to jump on.
True.
It's such a crapshoot. And one that DC got, I think, very lucky on with the new 52. Now, a lot of that was, you know, how they marketed it and who they put on stuff and the fact it's been coming out on time.
Well, I thought it was smart that they kind of, you know, pulled off the Band-Aid really quick, you know, and just did it all at once instead of dribbling out the relaunches over the course of, I guess, Marvel. I had read that they're going to put out a new number one every week for like 20 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just like that. I don't know how that's going to go. You know, it's just like almost like do it, get it over with.
Well, I know DC's gotten a little bit of flack for rotating creators on and off titles and stuff, but with very few exceptions, all of their books are coming out on time.
Well, yeah, DC's rotating creators, though, are pretty explicitly to keep the books on schedule, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, whatever other kind of reason that there might be to be doing that, they're really trying hard to make sure their books come out on time.
Well, I mean, the only two books out of the New 52 that I think shipped late, and by late I mean a week late, were Justice League number 10 and Batman Incorporated number 2. I mean, by and large, they're doing really well on getting the stuff out when it's supposed to come out. And, you know, that's, you know, you may argue, well, that's how they should be running their business. And it is. But actually doing that with that many different creators, etc., not easy. So they should get a little bit of credit for that. It's going to be interesting to see how their zero issue month does in a couple of months, and how some of that goes for DC. And, you know, how, I'm really curious how Valiant's going to look in a couple of months, in terms of sales stability and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when we get the Marvel Now, how much of a shakeup that is on their sales. Cause frankly, they could use a shakeup.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, another 2-3 months, the top ranked titles for Marvel are gone. You know, Spider-Man, Avengers versus X-Men, AVX versus, poof. You know, the bump they got on Astonishing X-Men, I expect to be gone next month. You know, and then it comes down to how are their core franchises, X-Men, Avengers, etc. How are those going to do?
Yep.
You know? Let's see. Majority of the items were at the $299 price point. That accounted for 134 of the items. Another 125 at $399, 26 at $350. Those three price points alone accounted for, let's see, 95% of the items. So only a couple of things coming in at a few other price points, with $499 being the next most prevalent. So I think we're seeing a lot of consolidation on the different price points, which I think is good.
Oh yeah, I agree.
I prefer the $299, obviously, but I understand the $399, particularly for the smaller publishers. I seriously question that. $399 is where comics want to be priced, because I've asked my comics, and that's not what they've said. They've been very quiet on the matter.
I say, hey,
they should be free. No.
Well, Mark Wade, when they talk to Mark Wade, they tell him that they should be 99 cents and digital.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean
know.
They should be 20 pages, though. You know, yeah. that's the trick.
They need to justify their cost is really what it comes down to. And that's a different equation for everybody for every title. But I think in some cases it's pretty clear certain books are doing better at that than others. Sometimes the sales actually reflect that. Sometimes people are getting them despite that.
Uh-huh.
So. Anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
I'm done.
Well, all right then. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during a month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look.
Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.